This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 23rd, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 388. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Canada in 2025 is a cesspool of unethical lobbying, politicians who profit from their own decisions, excessive secrecy, and failure to act against foreign interference. With a federal election coming, hear from one of Canada's top advocates for government integrity, transparency, and accountability. My guest is Duff Conacher, the co-founder of Democracy Watch. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
I'm complying with all the rules. Your line of questioning is trying to invent new rules. I'm complying with the rules that Parliament has laid out and the responsibilities of the Ethics Commissioner. And I will continue to comply with those rules.
He admits now, I'm not accusing him of a conflict of interest. He admits that he has conflicts of interest in his holdings. And he says that he's going to come up with a plan for that after the election. That is unacceptable. He should divulge all of his millions of dollars of holdings right now.
That was Prime Minister Mark Carney on March 17th in London, England, and Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre on March 20th in Saguenay, Quebec. This interview was recorded on March 19th.
Guest this week is Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch, and he's watching very closely the transition from the Trudeau years to the days and maybe even weeks of Mark Carney as Prime Minister of Canada. The former central banker is a man who wore many hats, but his biggest job before going into politics was as chair of Brookfield Asset Management. I mean, before then, of course, he was a central banker in England and Canada, but his most recent big job was chair of Brookfield Asset Management, which is a real estate finance and energy company that boasts $1 trillion of assets in its portfolio. At the end of 2024, according to a report that came out this week from Brookfield, Carney was eligible for $6.8 million in stock options that expire in 2033 and 2034. We don't exactly know everything about his finances, and we may not know them for months, because if he calls an election in the spring, he has no obligation under Canadian law to tell us about his assets until the summer. 120-day period where there's little that we can find out about him. Of course, Duff, is there anything that could stop him from volunteering that information now?
No, nothing at all. And actually, a lot of reporters have said, oh, we're going to learn after the 120-day period that's under the Federal Conflict of Interest Act, which is a federal political government ethics law. We will then know his assets and liabilities. And actually, no, not necessarily. There are even more loopholes that would allow him to hide those assets forever. And he'll know that he owns them, but and he'll be able to make decisions because of other loopholes in the ethics law that are huge and allow politicians to participate in decisions where they can profit from the decision. And he can keep all that information secret from the public.
Housing affordability is a major issue. Housing scarcity is a major issue. And here we've got someone that we don't know if he's going to profit from his decisions or if he's going to gain information that others can use to profit. What about Mark Carney's family members, his wife, his adult children? What do the laws say about them?
Well, there has to be a disclosure of spousal assets as well. But the easy thing to do, and Justin Trudeau did this, is, and it's allowed, even though it's completely unethical and a sham facade and a ruse, a shell game, a charade, no one should be fooled by it in terms of it, calling it ethical, is that what Trudeau had inherited from his dad was a trust. worth, he said, he disclosed that it was worth $2 million when he became prime minister in 2015. And it had has investments as part of the $2 million invested in private companies. Trudeau said, I don't know what they are. That's highly unlikely because trustees give up regular updates to those who are beneficiaries of a trust, including what they're invested in. And what he did was he put it in a blind trust. Well, it's not a blind trust because he knew what he was putting in the trust. He got to choose the trustee. And he's also allowed to give initial instructions to the trustee. And so is Mark Carney and any federal cabinet minister, cabinet staff person, cabinet appointee, or top government official. They're all allowed to do this. And then all they have to disclose is that they have assets in a blind trust. So if you look at Trudeau's disclosure in the public registry under the Conflict of Interest Act, which again, because of these loopholes, so many and so huge that it really should be called the almost impossible to be in a Conflict of Interest Act. That's how much of a sad joke the law is. But if you look at Trudeau's public registry disclosure, it says that he has an interest in a numbered company, and that's the trust that invests in companies, among other holdings it may have, and that's in a blind trust, and that's all we know. So it's a shell corporation, and it's a shell game. He's hiding under the shell, and all Carney would have to do is put his spouse's assets and his assets under shell companies, and then that all they have to disclose is that they own an interest in a shell company, and you never know what that shell company is invested in. So it's inaccurate. Some media reports have said, we're going to learn in 120 days. Why don't you disclose it now? It's inaccurate to say we'll learn in 120 days. He could easily continue hiding it forever, as Justin Trudeau has since 2015. And back then, the media just rolled over and accepted it. I don't know why. I guess only because Justin Trudeau wasn't coming out of business positions. He was coming out of being a teacher to become a politician. But, you know, he has investments. As well, Pierre Poilievre, who has been screaming about this as conservative leader, he was promoting cryptocurrencies when he was running for the leadership of the conservatives and said, I'm invested in crypto. Same thing. He was furthering his own interest by saying, I'll change the law to help the cryptocurrency industry when I become prime minister. And he was invested in cryptocurrency. It's allowed. You're allowed to do that because of another huge loophole in the law, so-called ethics law, that allows you to participate in decisions where you can profit from the decision while keeping your investments in the businesses you're helping secret. Again, that's how bad the law is. It's a sad joke.
Yeah, for politicians, they call it a blind trust, but they're allowed to glance or peek, but I guess they can look but not stare. It really is a backward system that allows, again, as you say, too many loopholes for the politicians to profit off their decisions.
Yeah, and a guy named Justice Parker did a royal inquiry into a cabinet minister of Brian Mulroney's called Sinclair Stevens way back in the late 80s. And he issued a report in 1987 saying, blind trusts are not blind. They're a sham facade. Politician knows what they own. They should be banned. And politicians should be required to sell their investments and serve the public when they're in public office. And politicians across the country, because these loopholes exist in every provincial, territorial, and municipal ethics law as well, they've ignored that, and they want to ignore it because some of them, certainly ones at the top, want to keep these loopholes open so that they can profit from their own decisions.
The devil's advocate, you hear a lot of people saying that Mark Carney is a skilled, successful person. He's been a central banker in two G7 countries. He became chair of a major corporation. And sure, he could be entitled to stock options and all the money that he's amassed over the years. Why is it important that we have conflict of interest laws? Why is it important that we press Mark Carney to reveal his information? Hasn't he earned it all? I mean, that's the devil's advocate point of view on this. So why is it important that our prime minister be transparent?
Well, again, transparency alone won't do it because the loophole still exists in the law that even if he did disclose all his assets, he could participate in decisions that would help those businesses that he's invested in. So we'd be able to maintain those ties, financial ties, have a financial conflict of interest, and make decisions that would make himself more money. So we need more than transparency. And this all has to be prevented because he would say, oh, I'm making these decisions because I think they're in the public interest, but maybe he's making them to profit. And that's the reason for conflict of interest laws. The conflict of interest law is the top two most important laws in our democracy. The anti-bribery law in the criminal code prevents bribery that would corrupt policymaking. Conflict of Interest Act should prevent conflicts of interest that would corrupt policymaking and lead to decisions that protect private interests, including the private interests of politicians, as opposed to decisions that uphold the public interest. And because no one can do a Vulcan mind meld, because only Spock could do that, and that was in a fictional show called Star Trek, no one can tell why someone is making a decision, what's between their ears. And that's why you have to prevent them from being in a conflict of interest by not having the financial investments that conflict with their duty to uphold the public interest. And if you don't have an effective system doing that, you're allowing them to make decisions that they could profit from. It's very dangerous. It leads to boondoggles and waste and corruption and abuse of the public interest.
And Mark Carney, of course, won the Liberal leadership campaign in a landslide on March 9th. But there still are so many questions, more questions than answers, about who donated and how much. I have reported on some of the events that have happened. The event that happened February 12th that real estate marketer Bob Rennie held here in Vancouver. As you pointed out, that there's huge loopholes in Canada's laws that allow foreigners, including foreign government-funded front groups and proxies, to secretly campaign and fundraise for party leadership contestants. And there's also the involvement of lobbyists who always do get involved with elections and with leadership contests. What is it that we don't know that we need to know, and how should this be changed so that we do get the transparency and accountability that we do deserve, so we get the right people running for office for the right reasons?
Yeah, again, a situation where, like so many in politics, there's a crossroads, and one sign says legal and the other side sign says ethical in different directions. And politicians say, oh, I'm following everything that's under the law, but that doesn't mean it's ethical, because politicians write their rules for themselves, and they've left open huge loopholes that allow trading of favors, essentially legalized bribery. And the trading of favors comes in lobbyists helping with campaigns, can do that in secret, no disclosure. And then the lobbyist goes back and is allowed, because the lobbyist code was gutted by MPs from all parties and the Commissioner of Lobbying a couple of years ago, and gutted in a way that says you can be a top campaigner for someone, help them fundraise, raise money, and you can be lobbying them within 6 months after you've finished. And it's all secret, the fact that you helped them. So it's pretty easy to get away with violating even that 6 month cooling off period, because there's no disclosure that you actually helped them. And that kind of favor trading is allowed. And then with fundraising events, yes, some of them have to be disclosed if a leadership contestant holds a fundraising event, but only if someone's required to donate. So there was reports that Chrissy Phelan held events where she suggested that you donate a certain amount, and because it wasn't required, then she doesn't have to disclose who organized the event, where it was held, or any of the details about who attended. So essentially a legalized bribery system, and hiding who's organizing fundraising events, who's holding them, other than the one you were able to speculate based on a postal code as to where it was actually held, who's attending exactly. And of course, it's an opportunity to lobby behind closed doors. And secret lobbying is allowed as well. So you could even be lobbying and fundraising. You wouldn't have to even show up in the registry of lobbyists federally, because there's loopholes that allow for secret lobbying. So we just have a layer cake of conflicts of interest and secrecy loopholes that allow the whole policymaking system to be corrupted. And the rules are worse than in the US. People think the US is bad. Because a third party, an interest group, can spend an unlimited amount of money during a leadership race in secret, and have it actually come from foreign sources. And that's the same for a nomination contest as well under the federal law. So when it comes to election period, you can't have a third party interest group or individual intervening that's using foreign money, although there's even a loophole in that would allow that to be easily hidden. But during the nomination contest or a leadership contest federally, it's wide open. You don't have to register, disclose that you're helping a contestant win. You can spend an unlimited amount of money and it can be foreign money.
And here we are in the post-Hogue Commission era, the Foreign Interference Inquiry, which handed down its final report at the end of January, and government has taken little or no action on that. I mean, we've had a prorogued parliament.
And the Liberals are entirely to blame for this because they delayed the inquiry from happening by having a sham investigation by an old friend of Justin Trudeau's, David Johnston, the former Governor General, who never should have been looking into Trudeau's activities and the activities of Trudeau's cabinet because he's a long-term family friend of the Trudeaus. And that delayed things by essentially a year. And even before that, the Liberals were delaying appointing him. And so this all should have been done, completely done, 2.5 years ago, which would have left lots of time for a bill to be passed before any election would occur that would have effectively, if it was effective, would have closed a bunch of these loopholes to prevent foreign interference. The Hogue Inquiry at the same time made some recommendations that were good, like closing some of these loopholes in nomination contests and party leadership contests, but also said disinformation is the most serious threat that we face. And then she didn't make any recommendations that are in any way effective to prevent, prohibit, or penalize disinformation. So she rolled over as well, unfortunately. And then we have the prorogation, and now rumors that Carney's going to call a snap election. Instead of taking a few weeks to work with the other parties and pass some measures to prevent, prohibit, and penalize foreign interference from tainting this federal election. And instead, he's acting in the partisan self-interest of the Liberals, who have caught up and eliminated the Conservatives' lead in the polls. And it's just a shame. In every single way, it's a shame. And this election is, I think, going to be undermined by foreign interference more than any other election has been. And it's, again, mainly the Liberals' fault, but it's really all parties' fault. All parties, the opposition parties had a majority of seats in Parliament. They could have passed measures to prevent, penalize, and prohibit foreign interference long ago if they wanted to. They didn't have to wait around for the Liberals. They had a majority in the House, and they could have done it. Passed a bill, sent it to the Senate, and dared the Senate to defy them. And it would be really difficult for unelected senators to say, oh, no, we think it's fine to allow for foreign interference. So all of them could have passed a bill long ago, and it should have been done. And really, politicians always say, oh, I don't understand why the public doesn't trust us. Because you do things like this. You leave loopholes open that allow for secret and unethical lobbying, allow you to profit from your own decisions, allow for excessive secrecy, sit around and play gotcha on foreign interference for years without actually dealing with it. That's why the public doesn't trust you, because you constantly act in your partisan self-interest instead of upholding the public interest and addressing real problems with real solutions.
Now, as of March 14th, Justin Trudeau was finished in the Prime Minister's office, but Democracy Watch is not finished with Justin Trudeau. Through the access to information system, especially from the RCMP files on the investigation or lack thereof of Justin Trudeau and others in the Liberal government over the SNC-Lavalin scandal that exploded back in 2019 when Jody Wilson-Raybould was shuffled out of the Attorney General's office, you were able to find out that there was no direct investigation, no interview of Justin Trudeau, even though all signs pointed to him in his office. Where does that stand today? What is the next step for your case, for the Democracy Watch case, which is supported by Wayne Crooks, the founder of Integrity BC? Where are you right now in terms of the private prosecution of Justin Trudeau over the SNC-Lavalin scandal?
Yeah, well, first, just a quick comment about another loophole-filled law. It's called the Access to Information Act. It really should be called the Guide to Hiding Information the Public Has a Right to Know Act, because that's all it is. There's no penalties for violating that act unless you actually destroy documents. But you can hide them without any penalty for years. And that's what the RCMP did. We requested these documents right from when this was all first investigated back in 2019. We said, we want the investigation reports, which you have a right to have. And under the law, they're supposed to give them within 30 days. Now, there were a lot of investigation records and the investigation was ongoing, but we kept on sending, you know, updates. Give us an update. Is it done? If it's done, send us the information. And we learned that it was actually done in March 2021 when we finally got disclosure in June of 2023. So it took us more than 2 years for the RCMP. They sat on it, and we got a first set of records in June 2023, finally. Showed the RCMP had sat on that final investigation report of its officers from March 2021 to January 2023 before they finally decided not to prosecute anyone. RCMP still refuses to disclose why they did that. And then we had to wait another year to get the rest of the records. And then there's redactions, as you said, that hide what some of the key witnesses told them. Key witnesses like Jody Wilson-Raybould, the person who was the attorney general and actually pressured, and Jessica Prince, her key staff person, who was also pressured by the prime minister and or his staff and others. So we filed this private prosecution with all this evidence showing the RCMP did not investigate this, but it shows that there was pressure. The RCMP then used the wrong legal standard. They said for an obstruction of justice to be proven, you have to have a corrupt intent. That's not true. You just have to have that it was done intentionally. And it clearly was done intentionally because it was done repeatedly, more than a dozen times, over and over, with Jody Wilson-Raybould saying this is wrong. So we filed this February 19th. The next step is what's called a speak to hearing, where we go in and the Ontario Crown, who's a Crown lawyer employed by the provincial government of Ontario, will go in and we'll be saying to the judge, this is how long it would take for an initial hearing that happens in private prosecutions, where we would lay out our case and ask for court approval to proceed with the private prosecution. That's called a pre-enquête hearing. The Ontario Crown prosecutor, again, an Ontario government lawyer, can take over the private prosecution at any time and stop it. We're going to ask the Attorney General to appoint a special counsel to do that. Someone who's fully independent from all political parties. Someone who should be appointed through an independent process, not by the Attorney General of Ontario, who is a conservative. We don't want this tainted by partisanship in any way. And we want that special prosecutor to decide whether to take it over, stop it, or allow us to just proceed with the private prosecution. And so that's our next step, is asking for a special prosecutor. People will recognize that probably in BC, because BC is the province that has appointed special prosecutors more than any other province. The problem with the system in BC is it is the government's attorney general, who comes from the ruling party, who appoints these special prosecutors. And usually the special prosecutor is appointed when there's some allegations against someone from the ruling party. And so there's a conflict of interest there. The ruling party should not be choosing anyone who's making a judgment about the ruling party. And that's why we want a fully independent special prosecutor appointed through a fully independent appointment process. And then hopefully we'll get a real assessment of the evidence, which the RCMP ignored, is still trying to hide. And really, it was a cover-up, because there was clear evidence that Justin Trudeau obstructed justice by trying to stop the prosecution of SNC-Lavalin, directed others to pressure the Attorney General to do that, to stop that prosecution, pressured her himself. And the RCMP rolled over and ignored all that evidence, didn't interview many key witnesses, and just covered it up and tried to bury it, as I said, through delay that was illegal, in violation of the Federal Access to Information Act. So that's why we're taking it to court. An open court judge in an open court should hear all of this evidence and make a decision about whether someone should be charged and prosecuted and charged for this. Not the RCMP behind closed doors, burying evidence and doing a shoddy, biased investigation. And just to end on one other piece of evidence, that the system really is the scandal. Lots of people don't know this. The commissioner of the RCMP, the deputy commissioner of the RCMP, and the head of every division of the RCMP are all appointed by the prime minister and serve at the pleasure of the Prime Minister. They can all be fired at any time for any reason by the Prime Minister. The RCMP is not an independent police force. It is a partisan police force that is biased and has a conflict of interest because it is serving at the pleasure of the ruling party Prime Minister. And that's the same with a lot of the provincial police forces across the country, where the ruling party premier chooses the head of the provincial police force, and they serve at the pleasure of that premier. Well, if you're serving at someone's pleasure, you shouldn't be investigating them, let alone deciding whether they should be charged or prosecuted. And so we need, as many people have called for, many experts over the years, we need a new national anti-corruption, anti-money laundering, anti-foreign interference police force that is fully independent of the ruling party, and every province needs one as well. Only Quebec has one. And it was created out of a corruption scandal that showed the police were not doing their job. And that's why it was created. Every province needs it, and the federal level needs it as well.
You mentioned Jessica Prince, a former aide to Jody Wilson-Raybould. Jessica Prince currently is an assistant deputy minister in the government, the NDP government here in British Columbia, in David Eby's office. And I'm going to end off with a question about David Eby's latest controversy. The NDP government's Bill 7, which was tabled before the spring break of the legislative session, the Economic Stabilization Tariff Response Act. This is a byproduct of the trade war with the United States. It gives the BC NDP cabinet even more power than it already has to bypass the legislature, make laws, change laws, without having to put it into the legislature for debate as we face this trade war with the United States. Is David Eby going too far?
Very much so. And it's very dangerous. And whenever you see a government push to expand cabinet's powers, there has to be a pushback, because removing those checks of having review through the legislature is what leads to boondoggles and corruption and waste and abuse of the public interest, just like secrecy does, and secret lobbying and all the other things we've been talking about. And my reading of the bill is that lots of people don't understand the difference between a regulation and a law. Many laws say the cabinet can now make regulations that fit within the framework of the law. And that's fine, right? Because the law has gone through parliament, and parliament or the legislature at the provincial level empowers the government, the cabinet, to make regulations, to set out the details, instead of having all the details in the law. But this law, this bill, from my reading, allows them to actually change the law through a regulation. And no, that should never be allowed. If a law is going to be changed, it should have to go through the review of the legislature with public debates and public hearings, because that's just fundamental to our system. Of having that public scrutiny. And regulations can be changed. Sure, you can say someone who was covered by this regulation is now exempt because we want to allow them as a local business to be able to do things they weren't able to do so they can flourish and compete better against Americans or others. But to change a law without having to go through the legislature, that's very dangerous precedent. And I think it would actually be struck down by the courts. And I think someone would challenge it because the law would be changed in a way someone would be upset with, and they would go to court. And I think the court would say, no, you can't change a statute without having the statute go through the legislative process. So hopefully they'll back off. The Greens are certainly saying they'll propose amendments. And we'll just have a reasonable law, which, you know, would allow them to act more quickly on some changes to regulations. Not that regulations take that long to go through. Anyway, you don't have to go through all the steps that a law has to go through, a bill has to go through. But, you know, speed it up a bit. Sure, that's fine. Nothing wrong with speeding things up a bit. You still have to always allow at least the usual 30 to 60 day periods for public consultations and debate. But the law goes much further than that, the bill does, that's proposed, and hopefully will be changed before it's enacted.
So thank you again to Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch. Where can people find out more information about Democracy Watch?
At democracywatch.ca, they can see all of our campaigns, information about the prosecution, and our campaigns to have everyone in politics and big business effectively required to be honest, ethical, transparent, representative, and waste preventing. And I'll keep you updated. We'll see how things go with all of these developments in these areas, and happy to talk again.
Thanks again.
Thank you for your interest.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Focus Taiwan.tw, Alaska Governor Mike Dunleavy on first visit to Taiwan. The main purpose of the delegation's visit is to explore further cooperation between Alaska and Taiwan in the areas of trade and economics. Dunleavy was first elected governor of Alaska in 2018, defeating former Democratic Senator Mike Begich, and was re-elected in 2022. The state of Alaska has maintained a sister state relationship with Taiwan since 1988, with a focus on economic ties in areas such as energy, agriculture, fisheries, tourism, and mining. In ABC News Australia, Australia drops out of top 10 in latest World Happiness Report. The World Happiness Report ranked Australia 11th and New Zealand 12th in the world, lagging behind Israel, Mexico, and the Nordic countries. Canada was 18th and the United States 24th. Last place was Afghanistan. Believing in the kindness of others is more closely tied to happiness than previously thought, according to the latest findings. In Kyoto News, Japan looks to AI to keep cherry blossom culture alive. The service called Sakura AI Camera, launched by Kirin Brewery, determines the age and vitality of cherry trees via users' smartphone cameras. Local governments can check the data and use it in their efforts to preserve the trees. And in Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong opposes bullying tactics, says leader John Lee, after Lee Ka-shing's C.K. Hutchison sells Panama ports to U.S. firm. Lee commented on the conglomerate's decision to sell 45 non-Chinese ports to American financial giant BlackRock. The deal is worth almost $23 billion U.S. dollars.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In The Oregonian, unsealed court records name top Nike executives accused of sexual harassment and misconduct. Many of the unsealed documents are from an informal 2018 collection of workplace complaints known as the Starfish Surveys. Documents were unsealed after a three-year battle between Nike and several news companies. In Crosscut, Washington keeps details of severe workplace injuries and deaths from public. Transparency or privacy? Labor and Industries says the law protects witnesses, while advocates contend it prevents scrutiny of serious incidents and investigations. The law, which was passed in 1973, when the state enacted the Industrial Safety and Insurance Health Act, exempts investigative files of serious injuries or deaths from the public record, making them available only to the injured worker or the family of a deceased worker, legal representatives, the worker's union, and the employer. Others have to petition Superior Court to get a copy. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Vancouver mayor invested in real estate crowdfunding firm that failed to register. And is new PM's honeymoon already over? Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and introducing bobmackin.substack.com.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to folks across British Columbia who work in immigrant settlement, childcare, employment training, addiction rehabilitation, supportive housing, and support for victims of crime. It is Community Social Services Awareness Month across British Columbia during March. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news.
Let's go home.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 23rd, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 23rd of March in 1996, Lee Teng-hui became the first Taiwan-born president and the first to be directly elected on the island nation? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.